From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Noe Valley, San Francisco.
DuBose Triangle, Lower Haight.
Visitation Valley.
Downtown San Francisco.
Oh, Ingleside, SF.
Coming up, we'll join a student with a learning difference as he finds his educational path.
It pretty much just flipped my world upside down.
Then we'll find a jazz scene in an unlikely place.
Some people cannot take it, like there was a guitar player, and he said, I cannot play with Ben, which has no leader.
And we'll reveal the audiograph mystery sound of the week.
Non più andrai farfallone ammaloso, notte giorno ed intorno girando, nelle mele c'è il mondo riposo, narcisetto al cielo l'amore.
What's that sound and where is it from? Find out today on Cross Currents. Tomorrow's the last day of classes in the San Francisco Unified School District. We are well aware the hallways of Burton High School, where our studios are located, are abuzz. And as students wrap up their school year, we've been taking the week to look at how their education works, in particular when they have special needs. For these kids, just getting access to services can be tough. In fact, a lawsuit making its way through the California courts contends some school districts aren't giving the students what they're guaranteed by the federal government, access to a free and appropriate education. What that means exactly is complicated, as KALW's Christine Stolakis found out. She traced the path of one student as he navigated the politics of special education. And a note to our listeners, KALW's license is held by the San Francisco Unified School District.
JT Worth is a ninth grader at Mission High School, and he's full of surprises. When I ask him how he feels about his learning disability, he replies,
I love it. Just makes me creative, makes me different. I get to meet cool, nice people. And I just think that in the long run, it's going to be great help for me.
JT is a really confident kid. But when he was younger, he struggled with his learning differences.
I was kind of competitive, and like with other kids, they would finish much faster than me or do things much faster. And it just got really upsetting and really annoying that, like, kids would be finishing faster.
And from the teacher's perspective, there's great teachers at this school he was at. It's Ye Kuo. They knew something was up, too.
That's Ann Worth, JT's mom.
So they were, you know, trying to help him. They pulled him out of class, and he, you know, they had some interventions. But in second grade, we talked to the school psychologist and requested an evaluation, and it was abruptly stopped because he was quote-unquote getting by.
So that's an example of an error that is avoidable.
Rachel Norton is president of the board of the San Francisco Unified School District.
Procedural errors like not generating in writing a denial of a service or of a parent request, not responding to a parent request within a certain amount of time. That's a procedural error that happens a lot.
Without the diagnosis, JT couldn't get an individualized education plan. An IEP is the document the government requires to give kids special education services. No diagnosis, no IEP, no services. JT's mom, Ann Worth, explains.
I had more than one person tell me that it's not the special education department's job to bring a kid up to their learning potential. It's just to, you know, make sure that everyone's proficient at the proficient level. And as a mom, I think my job is to make sure that my kids are learning to their potential.
His family decided to independently take him to the Pacific Medical Center for a neuropsych test. He was diagnosed with dyslexia. Putting a name to what he'd been struggling with was tough for JT because it made it feel permanent.
I knew that I had to deal with this thing all throughout my life. It pretty much just flipped my world upside down. Usually when I tell someone I have dyslexia, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, so you read things backwards. And I say no, and then they give me something to read, and I read it perfectly, and they're like, what, you don't have dyslexia? I have a slow processing dyslexia, so when I'm reading things, I have to read much slower, So I actually understand it. I can read fast, but I won't understand when I'm reading.
These misconceptions are not uncommon for people with learning disorders. Just ask Laura Maloney, the director of the Parent Education Network. It helps parents, students, and educators deal with learning and attention differences.
Well, I'm a person who grew up, even though it was a really long time ago, with learning and attention differences. So I was diagnosed with dyslexia in third grade, which wasn't the norm back then. And I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was in my 40s. I think the big misunderstanding and the one that I still struggle with personally is that it has something to do with your intelligence, that learning disabilities has something to do with your ability to learn, and it has nothing to do with your ability to learn. It's how you take in information.
Now remember, JT's diagnosis did not come from a school. It came from an independent medical center, so he still wasn't receiving any special education services. His family decided to pull him out and enroll him in Charles Armstrong, a private elementary school specializing in helping students with language-based learning differences, $32,500 a year.
We were very fortunate that both sets of grandparents helped us with the tuition, because he wouldn't have a college fund right now if they didn't help us with that. So, you know, I just always wonder what happens to these families and these kids who don't have access to this.
It was here that JT and his family started figuring out how to deal with his learning disorder.
They did a wonderful job there of helping support, you know, identify his strengths and provide him with tools and, you know, ideas.
Most importantly, they got him an IEP, stating what accommodations he needed in the classroom. Again, SFUSD Board President Rachel Norton.
What guides an individual child's plan is the individual education plan. And the law says that the plan must be individualized to the child. So what works for your child doesn't necessarily work for my child. And the plan is the contract.
When JT re-entered the school district in sixth grade, IEP in hand, he was armed with confidence and access to special education services.
It just makes accommodations for me, like extra time on tests, extra time to turn in homework. I have a support class, and yeah, it really helps.
Guides are limited to Japan for safety reasons.
This study skills class is part of Mission High School's resource support program. It's for kids like JT, who have IEPs, but are in general ed most of the day.
So do you think that's something important? Yeah, so why don't you can mention that?
Sarah Weider is JT's learning specialist. He sees her three mornings a week.
I teach them about why they have an IEP, what their learning strengths are, what their learning differences are. And I feel that's the most crucial part for a student to know. In order for them to go on and become successful, because once they graduate high school, no one's going to be there like me to help them out necessarily in school.
Weider says the toughest part of her job is getting kids like JT bought into trusting that she's there to help.
That was an easy case, yeah. Almost immediately, he was already bought in. I think there's been a lot of work done with other special ed teachers and with his family in the past, you can tell.
JT's in a good place, but it's been a struggle to get there. And this imperfect system isn't lost on the San Francisco Unified School District. As Board President Norton explains,
you know, from an educator perspective, they're trying to offer a service that they know that they can deliver within their budget and that they know that they have the training to provide. That doesn't mean that that's what the parent thinks is the most appropriate plan for their particular child. So that's where the tension comes in.
The search for a balanced budget might leave some kids without everything they need. Kids like JT before he got his IEP. But now, with the learning specialist helping to guide him, JT is thriving.
Miss Weider, she's kind of like a angel guardian, yes. Like someone who just like looks after you in the school. Yeah, that's a good way.
That's pretty sweet. That's pretty cute. I'm glad that, that I've been able to help him so much. I love when I see success, and I think JT is definitely a success story. takes a community to build, you know, to create success for a student.
In San Francisco, I'm Christine Stelakis for Cross Currents.
We'd like to hear your thoughts on special education. Do you have a child receiving services? Do you teach students with learning differences? Tell us about your experience on our tip line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we may share it on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And now for some artery cultural coverage that may sometimes be found in surprising places. San Francisco is a city of art. It's in the murals of the Mission District, the halls of the city's many museums, and sometimes in very unexpected places. That's what KALW's Laura Clivens experienced on a recent bike ride. Here's how it happened.
Sunday mornings are sacred, but not for any religious reason. It's when I head out for a weekly bike ride through Golden Gate Park, west to Ocean Beach. But one weekend, I decide to go on a Saturday instead. I take my usual route, cruising through the aromatic eucalyptus trees along the Panhandle, hugging the curves of John F. Kennedy Drive in Golden Gate Park. And when I arrive at the White Conservatory of Flowers, something's different. On my left, a soothing and out-of-place sound emerges. It's jazz.
We used to call this the Conservatory of Flowers, and we used to call this the Conservatory of Music.
That's Aaron Cohen. I find him with three other musicians playing underground. He's got his hands on a shiny alto saxophone on the southern end of a tunnel, about 50 feet long, that runs under JFK Drive. The musicians are perched on one side of the tunnel.
Some of the stuff I practice, my neighbors wouldn't want to listen to. So you can work out your stuff here. I use it as a rehearsal space.
But you wouldn't guess that. It sounds like a straight-up performance. Paul Corella plays a tenor sax, and he says there's a backstory to this musical gathering.
I remember coming through the park, this is over 10 years ago, and hearing somebody playing guitar. And I came out, and that's where I met Sid, who was a fellow who lives near the park who would use this as his practice room down here. So I brought my horn down, and we played, and then I just started coming down and practicing here if I had some time, because I didn't live too far, and we'd get together on the weekend and play.
When it's not raining or freezing, any number of jazz musicians can be found here on Saturday mornings, improvising melodies and wooing passersby. The musicians say the demand for their music in formal venues has gone down, making the tunnel sessions more significant over the years. Sitting on the steps, I watch as the musicians sway to the music, making eye contact with each other, nodding their heads in time, revealing subtle smiles. They are clearly enjoying themselves, and it draws people in. Couples approach and share a kiss. Young children come and dance. At some point, a family of Spaniards approaches. The father picks up a free guitar and sings a spirited version of Guantanamera that Cohen is happy to accompany on his sax. Corella says this space is key to the magic that they're creating.
The acoustic properties are really something. I mean, I play different spaces, and this has just got a wonderful hang time. It's not too long, just long enough to make the sound. It's very round. Sounds good.
That guy who jumped in to agree is Peter Tittelbach. He's an electric guitar player, originally from the Czech Republic.
It's better than Carnegie Hall or whatever, you know, Davis, Symphony Davis Hall. It's got better acoustic than Symphony.
It's fun to hang with these guys. They seem like old friends. They say this is where they're free to play around and improvise.
I'd say it is, sure. You know, and if it works for them, you know, then, you know, they'd become, I'm sure, a part of it.
By works for them, he means they need to withstand a democracy, a musical one, that is.
So far, it's like no leader. People just come on their own. You know, nobody tell what we're going to do. You know, and it's some people cannot take it. Like there was a guitar player, and he said, I cannot play with band which has no leader. And I said, this is most democratic things I can find, you know, because like nobody ever, you know, kind of like want to be on top.
I can't imagine who wouldn't love this. But Corella says there are a few downsides, like the chilly wind.
You know, brass instruments really get cold and they go flat. So you got to, you know, you have to make up for it by tuning your instrument to to an extreme that makes it sometimes very difficult to play.
And then there's mention of some mosquitoes here and there and the rare instance of a park ranger visit.
We had a nice crowd here and we're playing great. And a park ranger came and he was really feeling guilty about it, but he told us that he said, oh, I'm just telling you, I got a complaint that you have to go, but you don't have to go. You know, he said he was going to call in sick next week so he wouldn't have to do this.
Good call. As it nears 1 o'clock, the wind picks up and the musicians begin to pack up. Their stint here is over this week, but they'll be back next week and the week after. And it's not for any recognition or any tips. Actually, Paul Corella says, since it's not a hired gig,
if we blow a few notes here and there, it's okay. It's more about our just getting some experience.
And for people like me, passing by, it's about an experience too. The one of stumbling across something surprising on a familiar path. In Golden Gate Park, I'm Laura Clivens for Cross Currents.
What surprising artistic experiences have you had around the city or around the Bay? Share them with us. Comment on this story online at KALW.org or share them with us on Facebook. We're KALW. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this.
Non più andrai farfalloni amoroso, notte, giorno, in intorno, girando, nelle mele del mondo riposo, narcisetto al cielo d'amore.
We asked what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. KALW's Julie Kane brings us this week's answer.
We are at Powell Street at the Turnaround in San Francisco, California, of course. The only place where you'll hear something like this, more than likely.
Non più andrai farfalloni amoroso, notte giorno in intorno girando.
My name is Tim Blevins, better known alias Opera. Everybody calls me Opera. I have a degree in music and voice, and I've actually worked around the world. I'm unemployed at the moment, so I'm just singing, you know, wherever.
Alla gloria
militare. And what is it about opera that really speaks to your soul? Like, why opera?
I don't know. I mean, when I started singing opera, I was in, I was 23. I was in college, and I heard a Verdi piece. And it was Otello. It was Iago's aria from Otello. And, you know, the hair stood up on my, you know, I got goosebumps.
La tua meta già vedo.
It's just so dramatic. It's, you know, and then the story behind it, if you know what's going on behind it, it's just, the music, musically, is just incredible.
And Othello is about what, in a nutshell?
He's a black man, actually. He's a Moor. And Iago was his nemesis, you know. Iago was trying to set him up so that he would, he thought that his girl, Desdemona, I think her name is, was cheating on him. And he kills her, you know. And so, you know, that's basically what most opera plots are about. You know, some guy loves another guy's woman, and they kill, you know, in order to get the woman, they kill that, you know. And then the lady kills herself, you know, just some crazy stuff, you know.
We got a lot of calls on this one. Here are some of your guesses.
There's a guy singing Italian opera.
The opera singing busker in San Francisco.
I believe he wears a top hat and holds a little gold bag, and he'll sing anything anybody asks him to.
I think he's in front of either Powell Street Station at the cable car turnaround or Embarcadero Station. I hear him all the time. He busts throughout the system.
And I think it came from Max's Opera Cafe in San Francisco.
That guy who sings opera on Maiden Lane, and I think that could be Union Square and one of the hotels. I think one of the front doorman was singing the Italian opera.
I know that sound you just played. It's the guy that sings opera at Civic Center in the Tenderloin.
The gentleman who sings opera over there, I don't know his name.
I've seen him in other bar stations, but we know him from Civic Center because we get off at Civic Center to work at the California State Building. So I don't know what else I'm supposed to tell you, but that's what it is. Thanks, bye.
Great guesses, folks, but we can only have one winner, and that is Aaron Nahamanerva. Congratulations, Aaron. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. Aaron recognized Tim Blevins' voice because she, too, is a busker. In fact, she's trying to raise enough money for a trip to Ireland. For the rest of you, there'll be another contest next week. Here's a sneak peek at next week's mystery sound. Is that and where is it from? If you think you know, call 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and you may be the next week's winner of a KALW t-shirt. And go to KALW.org to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And that does it for Cross Currents from KALW News. Today's team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Dora Finkelstein, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Christina Loring, Daphne Matsiaraki, Stephen Short, Eva Sonsa, and Adam Teitelbaum. And we welcome our new volunteers, Lisa Carmack and Benjamin DeLuca. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. They're online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. And wait, what's that sound?
Congratulations! I am so proud of all of you. Work hard and stay true to yourself. God bless you.
That's the sound of high school graduation. We'd like to congratulate the 2013 graduating class of Burton High School. Today's grads include former Cross Currents volunteer
Jasmine Guadalupe Hernandez
and former Cross Currents volunteer
Buffy Amandares.
From all of us at KALW, congratulations, class of 2013. The music you're hearing is by Meredith Axelrod. She joins Craig Ventresco this Saturday for an afternoon performance at Atlas Cafe in San Francisco. The show is free. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Sadness to you must you sing of days gone by?